The outlaws always took a keen interest in the relations who came to their respective families for Christmas. This year, a cousin of Ginger's mother, whom none of them had ever seen before, by name Percy Penhurst, had written to invite himself to Ginger's for Christmas. Ginger's mother was favourably impressed by his letters. "He's very much looking forward to seeing Ginger and his friends," she said. "He's very fond of boys." It was William who, when told of this, succinctly remarked, "Well, perhaps he is, but that's not the point. The point is, are boys fond of him?" Ginger was uneasy. He was having a party on Christmas Eve, and Cousin Percy's presence would make or mar it. A peculiar relation who can be publicly mimicked is an excellent weapon of offence for months to come. The reports that reached them were reassuring. "He's wonderful with boys," said Ginger's mother, after reading the letter in which he told her what train he was coming by, "and he always gets on well with them." It was again William who pointed out that the source of this information was obviously Cousin Percy himself. Ginger was inclined to be optimistic. "He's been abroad anyway," he said, "so he's probably shot wild animals, in which case he's sure to be a decent sort." To this, at any rate, the outlaws agreed. Ginger's mother had told Ginger that he might bring William and Henry and Douglas back to tea on the day of Cousin Percy's arrival, because he was so fond of boys. She met them at the door. "He's come, and you're sure to like him," she whispered. "He's awfully nice." The outlaws entered the drawing-room, where Cousin Percy was awaiting them. On Ginger's face was a ray of hope that died away as his anxious eyes fell upon this Christmas guest, for a large, hearty-looking man rose from a chair by the window, smiling expansively. His smile, in fact, was little short of devastating. It revealed every one of his teeth. He advanced upon the outlaws, holding out his hands with a large, welcoming gesture. "Well, my boys," he said, giving each one a boisterous and friendly shake, "how are you? How are you? I can't tell you how I've been looking forward to this minute. We're going to be great friends when we get to know each other, and we can't begin to do that too soon." Then he began the process known as getting to know each other. He was revoltingly familiar and odiously breezy. His familiarity and breeziness froze the very blood in the outlaw's veins. And Ginger's mother watched them proudly, thinking how charming Cousin Percy was, and how splendidly they were all getting on together. After tea, Cousin Percy suggested a walk, and still talking breezily, laughing boisterously, he set off, accompanied by four dejected boys. He took them through the wood, and with the offensive jocularity of one who thinks he's imparting instruction so subtly that the recipient has no idea that he's being instructed, a manner that the outlaws detested beyond all others, he taught them how to tell the various trees from their shapes and twigs, though there were no leaves on them. The outlaws had not the slightest desire to be able to tell the various trees from their shapes and twigs, though there were no leaves on them. Trees were not divided into oaks and beeches and elms in the outlaws' eyes. They were divided into trees that could be climbed and trees that could not be climbed. They had no wish to extend their botanical knowledge beyond that point. But Cousin Percy was not disconcerted by their unresponsiveness. In fact, he saw it as shy admiration. "Oh, I'm used to being hero-worshipped by boys," he had told Ginger's mother. "I don't discourage it, because it doesn't do them any harm. Does them good, in fact. Give them a sort of standard to aim at, if you know what I mean." Once out of the wood, Cousin Percy began to tell them stories of his childhood. Never had boy been so brave, so popular, and so manly as Cousin Percy. His life had consisted in daring exploits undertaken invariably on someone else's behalf. Occasionally, it seemed, Cousin Percy had got into trouble in the fashion of ordinary boys, but on every occasion only because he was shielding the real culprit. "I always took the punishment rather than play the sneak, my boys." And he had frequently challenged a big boy who was bullying a little one, however painful the consequences. "Always protect those who are weaker than yourself, my boys." It was a dejected little group that accompanied Cousin Percy homeward. "Delightful boys," said Cousin Percy to Ginger's mother, "but at present rather shy." Ginger's mother was surprised to hear that. "They aren't generally shy," she said. Cousin Percy laughed. "Oh, I dare say it was a bit of a shock to find a grown-up so very unlike the ordinary grown-up, as I am. I understand boys thoroughly, you see. Oh, they won't be shy with me for long." Ginger's mother could hardly believe her ears when she heard that Ginger did not like Cousin Percy. As she said to her husband, "It worries me, dear, because he's so wonderful with boys. I'm so sorry that Ginger doesn't like him. I do so hope that he'll come to like him as he gets to know him better." But Ginger didn't come to like him as he got to know him better. In fact, the better he got to know him, the stronger his antipathy became. The other outlaws, of course, would not forsake Ginger in his hour of need, and they joined the long walks with Cousin Percy and listened to Cousin Percy being so boisterous and breezy and slyly improving. "It's the lessons they learn without knowing they're learning them that stick," he said to Ginger's mother. "A boy will learn a lesson in manliness from an entertaining story better than from any amount of sermons." So the outlaws listened to entertaining stories of Cousin Percy's manly boyhood till, as William said, "I feel the only thing I want to do is go and sneak on someone or bully someone." Cousin Percy played little tricks on all of them and chided them gently for their lack of enthusiasm. "A manly boy," he said, "is the first to appreciate a joke against himself and the first to tell it to others." Cousin Percy, it transpired, had brought a little conjuring outfit with him. He showed it to them one day after tea. The tricks were puerile in the extreme and accompanied by a facetious patter that made the outlaws blush for very shame. They sat in a dejected row and counted the moments till the exhibition should be over. Then Cousin Percy turned to them with his toothy smile and said, "And now I'll tell you about a little treat I've got in store for you. I'm going to do all these tricks and a few more at this party of Ginger's on Christmas Eve. I'll tell you what I think we'll do. We'll have my little conjuring show first, and then we'll have tea. And then I'll tell them about my travels in Italy. I brought some slides of it down specially. We'll hire a magic lantern, and I think you'll find they'll all thoroughly enjoy it." Ginger's mother was delighted with the suggestion. She'd been dreading Ginger's party. Her memories of previous parties of Ginger's were nightmare memories of bedlam let loose. She thought that Cousin Percy's suggestion was an excellent one. She couldn't understand Ginger's attitude to it. "He's so charming," she said, "and so good with boys. I'm sure that all the boys who come to the party will like him immensely." But Ginger knew otherwise, and the outlaws knew otherwise. From being a private thorn in their flesh, Cousin Percy seemed likely to become a public humiliation. His smile, his voice, his breeziness were so terribly mimicable. All the acquaintances and potential enemies who were to attend Ginger's party would have weapons of offence against them for years to come. The outlaws had visions of a future in which their enemies pursued them through the village and over the countryside with Cousin Percy's toothy smile and intolerable breeziness. William's listlessness dropped from him. This calamity was not one to be meekly endured. It was one to be averted at all costs. Cousin Percy was pleased to see a new alertness in William as they took their daily walks abroad. William listened to him intently and watched him closely. Cousin Percy said to Ginger's mother that evening, "I always notice that a boy smartens up when he's been with me for some time." He could not know, of course, that William was watching him carefully for any weak spot that might be used against him. But Cousin Percy seemed to have very few weak spots. The party was now only 3 days off, so that William had almost given up hope. Still, being William, he had not quite given up hope. And as they walked along the road and Cousin Percy discoursed breezily on the solar system, he was still watching him narrowly, listening to him intently.
"Yes, my boy, it's a wonderful thought that those dots that look to us like the tiniest pinpricks in the heavens are really worlds as big as ours. Wonderful to think that..."
They were just turning into the lane that led back to Ginger's home. Suddenly, Cousin Percy halted.
It's a beautiful afternoon, boys. Suppose we go back the longer way. If we hurry, we shan't be late for tea."
Dejectedly, the outlaws turned with him to take the longer way. William, however, looked a little less dejected than a moment ago. Right in the distance, on the shorter road that Cousin Percy had decided not to take, William had caught sight of a herd of cows blocking the way. Cousin Percy, William concluded, had caught sight of them too. The next day, Cousin Percy went for a walk through the woods with the outlaws to discuss the final arrangements for the party.
I hope you haven't told your friends about me. It'll give Ginger a bit of a pull, what old fellow, when they find out that he's got a cousin who can do conjuring tricks. I remember well enough when I was about your age what a god a man seemed who could do conjuring tricks. Well, of course, it isn't everyone.
Excuse me, interrupted William. I think that keeper wants to speak to me. And he went off to a keeper who was walking through the undergrowth some distance away, and who certainly didn't appear to have any desire to speak to William. He returned quickly. He wanted to warn us that a mad bull's escaped from Jenks's farm and got into the wood. He says, be very careful, because it's coming this way. It's coming this way now. Just near where they were standing was a small shed, not much bigger than a dog kennel, used by the keepers to store food for pheasants. It was empty now, and the door hung open. Into this, Cousin Percy flung himself with a cry of terror, drew the door to, and fastened it. It was a very tight fit, but he just managed it. After a few seconds, however, he heard William's reassuring voice. I say, it's all right. I made a mistake. He didn't say there was a mad bull. He said, be sure and keep to the paths. I made a mistake. Slowly, thoughtfully, Cousin Percy came out of his little shed. Slowly, thoughtfully, Cousin Percy accompanied them homewards. They made no reference to the incident, however, and he was recovering something of his breezy assurance by the time they reached Ginger's house. By the time they sat down to tea, he had quite recovered it. But suddenly, William raised his penetrating voice to address Ginger's mother. I made such a silly mistake today. We were in the wood, and I saw a keeper, and I thought he said there was a mad bull in the path, and I told Mr. Penhurst, and he got into a little shed so as to be safe. We couldn't get into it too, because there was only room for Mr. Penhurst. And then I found that I'd made a mistake, and that what the keeper had really said was to be sure to keep to the paths. Wasn't it silly of me making a mistake like that? Ginger's mother looked at Cousin Percy. Cousin Percy gulped and swallowed and began to discuss the arrangements for the party. While he was discussing them, Henry's mother called, and to her too William told the story, resisting all Cousin Percy's attempts to guide the conversation into other channels. "Wasn't it a silly mistake?" said William. "I must be going deaf. You see, I thought he said there was a mad bull in the wood, and Mr. Penhurst got into a little shed that there was just room for him in it, and we stayed outside, of course, because there wasn't room for us all in the little shed as well as Mr. Penhurst. And then I asked the keeper again what he'd said, and he said he'd only said, mind and keep on the paths. Wasn't it silly of me making a mistake like that?" Cousin Percy, smiling a ghastly smile, said that of course he knew what the keeper had really said, and that he'd gone into the little shed to amuse the boys. But it wasn't convincing, and when William's mother came to ask Ginger's mother for her recipe for flapjacks, and William went through the whole story again, he didn't even attempt the explanation. He merely smiled his ghastly smile. "It's a jolly good joke against myself," said the suddenly voluble William. "And Mr. Penhurst said that a manly boy ought to be the first to tell a joke against himself, so that's why I'm telling everyone about it. Fancy me being so silly as to think he said there was a mad bull in the wood, when all he said was to be sure to keep to the paths, and giving poor Mr. Penhurst the trouble of getting into that shed that was so little that there wasn't room for anyone else in it, and all 'cause I made such a silly mistake. I jolly well deserve to be laughed at about it." Cousin Percy's smile grew yet ghastlier as he began to describe how he had once changed defeat into victory for his side at an important cricket match. But even Cousin Percy could see that his audience was distray. They were listening to a description of Cousin Percy turning defeat into victory, but they were thinking of Cousin Percy fastening himself safely into the little shed, leaving William, Ginger, Henry and Douglas outside. The next day was the day before the party. William, Henry and Douglas went as usual to call for Ginger and Cousin Percy, and they all set off for a walk. Cousin Percy was at his most breezy and boisterous. He evidently meant to start afresh and to blot out completely the memory of yesterday's unfortunate incident. But William didn't. William told the story to everyone they met in the village. "I keep remembering what you said about a manly boy being the first to tell a joke against himself," he remarked again, guilelessly, to Cousin Percy. "That's why I'm telling them all." Cousin Percy endured it till tea time, when William dropped his final bombshell.
"I bet all the boys at the party tomorrow will laugh at me," he said, "when I tell them of the silly mistake I made yesterday."
It was then that Cousin Percy told Ginger's mother that he was sorry not to be able to stay over Christmas after all, but that urgent business would take him home first thing tomorrow morning. He added that he was sorry to miss Ginger's party. Ginger's mother retained a pathetic trust in him, in spite of everything. As the fun of Ginger's party waxed fast and furious, and one crowd of boys pursued another crowd of boys with ear-splitting war-whoops up the front stairs and down the back, Ginger's mother wrung her hands and said plaintively to William's mother, "If only Cousin Percy hadn't had to go home, they'd never have got as rowdy as this. He's so wonderful with boys."